You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast episode 581.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Whoa. Hey, Kevin. What's up?
Well, our 1980s-themed shows continue. Week two of the 80s. We're celebrating 1981 this week because it's Flopcast episode 581. That's how that works.
I am having such fun with this.
Oh, good. Yeah, we've got a couple of silly 1981 things to get to later on, but we got a couple of things to get to before that. So let's jump right in to the silly things. Cornflake, what is National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
It's a Colin Hay National Whatever Day, Kevin.
Oh, that must be one of our best kinds of whatever days. You know I love Colin Hay.
Yes, he's turning 70 on June 29th.
Oh, okay.
70th birthday for Colin Hay. Can you even believe it?
I have been a fan, not since 81. I think 82 would have been when I discovered Colin Hay, frontman of Men at Work back then. I think 82 was when Men at Work exploded in America.
Yeah, that sounds about right. They released their debut album Business as Usual in 1981, but I don't think we heard about them right off the bat.
Yeah, I think 82 was the big year for Business as Usual, the album over here with Who Can It Be Now and Down Under and Be Good Johnny. And then they just cranked out the follow-up record immediately afterwards. The Cargo album came out right after that with Overkill and It's a Mistake and Dr. Heckel and Mr. Jive. They put out a bunch of big hit classic Australian rock songs in a hurry in the early 80s. And I loved it.
Yeah, they just kept us well supplied. I didn't even know those songs came off of two different albums. They sounded uniformly wonderful.
Yeah, they all came out in very quick succession. And then there was a third Men at Work album in 1985, and I'm the only one who bought it.
Right. I remember nothing from that album.
Yeah, nobody does except me. They kind of closed up shop after that third record, and then Colin started his solo career, which continues to this day. There's been an occasional Men at Work reunion along the way, but it's been Colin solo for several decades now, and he's had a fine, fine solo career.
And we've done a fair bit of talking about him on the Flopcast already, so I figured this is pretty convenient whatever day to have. But no mention of Colin Hay for a National Whatever Day would be complete without mentioning God's Comics.
I happen to be in a Colin Hay cover band, yes. one of my bands, Sponge Awareness Foundation is my mainstream sellout band, but then my little cool alternative band is God's Comics. That's Sean and Adam and I are God's Comics. We do Elvis Costello songs, and we do Men at Work songs, and a little bit of Colin Hay solo as well, perhaps. And the Monkees. We added Monkees songs to our repertoire. It's a very specific cover band, and we perform, literally, we perform once every 10 years. We've done three shows so far.
I saw the last one.
You were there.
I was on a very comfy couch.
Well, mark your calendars, everybody, because if I'm doing the math correctly, we are 6 years away from the fourth God's Comic show. That should be coming up in 2029. Watch for that. We'll announce it here when it's coming up. Don't worry. I'll make sure you don't miss it. But I like to tell people, if you do miss it, it's okay, because there's always another God's Comic show coming around eventually.
I love your definition of eventually. Eventually in a decade.
But I've been to many Colin Hay shows over the years, both with his band, with the Men at Work reunion shows, or the Colin Hay band version, or the Colin Hay solo version. He's a magnificent performer and storyteller. Very, very funny guy. When he does his solo shows, he will go for several minutes between songs sometimes, just telling very, very funny stories. A hugely entertaining performer. And you have not seen Colin Hay live yet, have you?
I have not. I have only heard tale of him from you.
Yeah, we've got to go. You and I have. I think COVID killed. We had plans to go to a Colin Hay solo show, and it kept getting pushed back and pushed back throughout the pandemic. But he'll come back around.
Yeah, surely he has to, because he did release an album last year.
Oh, yeah. He keeps cranking out the records, and he tours a lot. So I think he's on the Ringo tour now. He goes out as part of Ringo's All-Star Band tours.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's out with Ringo right now. But he'll do his own solo shows again at some point. And we really need to get you to a Colin Hay show, because you would love it.
I love when artists tell funny stories between songs. So yeah, that's totally my jam.
And there's also a good documentary about Colin Hay. I don't know if it's kicking around on streaming things or whatever right now, but if you can find it, there is a fantastic Colin Hay documentary. I do recommend that. And at the very end, look very carefully at the very end of the movie. You can see me. I make a cameo appearance at the end of the Colin Hay documentary. Both me and the mayor of Chickentown. You can see us both if you look very carefully at the very end.
That's so neat.
We didn't get any money. I don't think we're listed in the credits. We should probably sue. I didn't sign any release forms about it, but we are in there. Check it out. And happy birthday, Colin Hay.
70 on June 29th.
Another very appropriate whatever day for our 80s shows.
True that. And once again, this is not on purpose.
It just keeps happening. Hey, we've got some follow-up, as we do every week lately. More follow-up. Cornflake, this is Maids and Butlers week 5.
We are never escaping the segment.
Well, this is my fault, because last week, Eclectic Lee was kind enough to write up a list of butlers that we had not mentioned. He sent us a great little list of butlers. We read through those last week, and I challenged Lee to send us some maids, which he did.
That will only encourage him.
I was hoping it would. So yeah, Lee came through for us again. Eclectic Lee sent us a maid list. So here's some maids that Lee provided. Amelia Bedelia. I remembered that
right.
name. I had to look it up because I'd heard that name, but I couldn't remember what that was. It's children's books, right? Did you read these books?
Yes.
Yeah, you know the books?
Yes.
And she worked as a maid.
I always forget that about her.
This was like a woman that takes everything you say very literally, and so she won't do what you really mean for her to do. She'll do something wrong because of how literally she takes things. I think that's the wacky premise based on what I read this afternoon.
Wacky, frustrating, depends on who you ask.
Yeah, but evidently in many of these stories, she's working as a maid.
Right.
So there you go. Did you like these? Did you read them?
They were not my go-to, but I do remember Amelia Bedelia. Right.
He listed Cinderella with a question mark.
Right. So she had to do all the cooking and the cleaning. And
she did all the housework.
For the stepmother, the evil stepmother and the two ugly stepsisters.
Everybody was evil, and there's Cinderella doing the housework. Yeah, so Lee put a question mark on that, because I don't know if we'd officially designate Cinderella as a maid, but perhaps.
Yeah, maid is a chosen profession. That was indentured servitude,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah. Here's another Disney thing. Fifi the Feather Duster Maid from Disney's Beauty and the Beast. I don't remember that.
I don't remember her name being Fifi, but I do remember seeing her.
Okay. I remember like a candle guy and the...
Lumiere. Yeah, Lumiere and Fifi had a thing.
The Angela Lansbury tea kettle, whatever that was.
Yes. Mrs. Potts, you're talking about.
I saw Beauty and the Beast once, 30-something years ago.
I saw Beauty and the Beast way more than once, and I still didn't remember the maid's name as Fifi. So I got to hand it to Eclectically.
All right. So the Feather Duster was a maid. That makes sense.
She was very pretty.
Really? Good looking Feather Duster?
She's very pretty for a duster, yes.
A hot Feather Duster.
She made those Swiffers look basic.
Oh, yeah. They looked hideous. They looked like monsters. compared to what you consider a super hot feather duster, Fifi. We know what you're into. This means nothing to me, but this says Roll, the sister of Rockman, a.k.a. Mega Man. I had to look this up. That's a video game.
That is correct.
There's a video game Mega Man. In Japan, it's Rockman, and Mega Man has a robot-maid sister named Roll. Are you familiar with Mega Man, the video game? Because I am not.
Very little.
Do you remember a robot maid?
No, not at all.
So many robot maids out there. I guess that makes sense. Get yourself a robot, you put it to work around the house. I guess all those Roombas everybody has now, essentially those are robot maids, right?
True that. Don't call them that in earshot, though.
Absolutely not. They're always listening.
You do not want a Roomba uprising.
He also lists Rosario Salazar from Will and Grace. I never saw Will and Grace.
Oh.
Do you remember a maid, Rosario?
Barely.
Okay.
Yes.
That was the initial list that Lee sent anyway. Then he sent a follow-up email.
Initial?
Yes. With one more. Lee wrote back to say his oldest son added to the list from Spaceballs. Dot Matrix. Now, I think this might be in error because I looked this up. I don't remember Spaceballs very well. I only saw Spaceballs once in the 80s.
Same.
When it came out. Dot Matrix is like the Joan Rivers C-3PO.
Yes.
Remember like there was a C-3PO that looked and talked like Joan Rivers? That's Dot Matrix. Good name for a robot. I like that.
Yeah, really cool.
I don't think she was a maid, though. There was another robot maid in Spaceballs. There was a giant robot maid in space called Mega Maid, like a spaceship transformed into a maid with a giant vacuum cleaner to suck all the atmosphere away from a planet.
Huh.
Based on my research today. Yeah, I watched the clip of the movie. So I think Lee's son may have been misremembering. He didn't mean Dot Matrix. He meant Mega Maid. I don't think the Joan Rivers C-3PO Dot Matrix was a maid. But I could be wrong. Maybe they're both robot maids. I don't know.
But now that you mention Mega Maid.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of American Maid from The Tick.
Good point. That's a fine, fine maid. That how did we overlook American Maid through 5 weeks of Maid and Butler talk?
She would have thrashed some of the competition,
yeah,
I feel.
That's one that we somehow overlooked. Yes. Good catch. Right at the last minute.
I'm not trying to show up eclectically. I'm not trying to like bring on another list or anything. It just popped into my head.
My friend Maria dressed up as American Maid at Dragon Con many years ago. It was super cute.
That's an awesome costume.
And that's a fine way to cap off our Maid and Butler discussion. I'm calling it, Cornflake. We're done.
For real?
Yeah, I think this is it.
For total realsies, are you sure?
It's time to move on after 5 weeks from maids and butlers. But look at all the fun we had.
We couldn't stop having fun. That was the problem.
Yeah, with Joe and then with Lee. Everybody got in on the maid and butler action. And we're done. Let's move on. I have another concert report for you. I went to a show.
Tell me about this show.
This kind of popped out of nowhere. Surprise concert suddenly came up and the mayor and I were able to go in and check it out. Well, I didn't go to this one, but last week out in Western Massachusetts, there was a big like 90s festival show, a bunch of 90s acts.
Oh yeah, wasn't like Toad the Wet Sprocket there?
Yeah, I think the headlining bands were Toad the Wet Sprocket and Gin Blossoms, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also in the lineup were Juliana Hatfield and Kay Hanley.
That's solid.
We are major fans of both of those 90s Boston rock ladies, Kay and Juliana. But I think because they had that show coming up the day before that show last week, they did a show, actually two shows, locally in the Boston area. Just Kay Hanley and Juliana Hatfield did a show at the Burren.
Nice of them to not make us drive all the way across the state to see them.
So we went to check that out. And this was at the Burren. You know, and you know the Burren, right? We've been there.
Yeah, I've seen a show there, but they also just occasionally have music with a house band. It's good stuff.
That's like a no fooling around Irish pub. They'll do like Irish session music.
Yes.
In the middle of the front bar room.
And I don't know if they serve it still, but if they do, yeah, they have fantastic stew.
Oh, all right.
Good music, great stew. The Burren.
They do serve some fine food there, but there's a back room at the Burren with a big stage, and they do concerts back there. So this was Kay and Juliana in the back room. And this show, as soon as they announced that it sold out instantly, we were able to snag a couple of tickets. But then because it sold out so fast, they added a second show, an early show. We were at the 7 p.m. show, but they had done a 4 p.m. show right before that.
Wow.
Super early afternoon show. Yeah. In fact, when we got there, the 4 o'clock show people were still milling about, and I caught a glimpse of Tanya Donnelly.
Oh, she came out for this?
Tanya was there. Yeah, she was not part of the show, but yeah, we were walking in, and I did like a double take, like, wait a minute, that's Tanya Donnelly over there, you know, from Belly and The Breeders. Throwing Muses, Tanya Donnelly, another legendary 90s rock lady out of Boston who we are big fans of. Yeah, I thought that was cool that Tanya was there. She went to the early show, I found out later, so she was on her way out. But we went back there to the Burren. It was weird for me seeing Kay and Juliana on that stage in this the back room of this little Irish pub because I've been on that stage.
When were you on that stage?
Isn't that weird? They're playing the same rooms as me now.
That is unusual.
That can't bode well for their careers. They've sunk to my level. Now, with Boston Skeptics a few years ago, I used to host the Boston Skeptics lecture series, and we did Boston Skeptics out of that back room of the Burren a few times.
Sometimes twice in one night at 4 o'clock and then at 7.
Oh, yeah. We were so hugely popular that we had to add a second show. Now, I don't think the Boston Skeptics were selling out the Burren quite as quickly as Kay and Juliana. Kay went up first, Kay and her band, doing mostly her solo stuff, only did a couple of Letters to Cleo songs. And at the end, to really throw a nice treat to the crowd, she did a Josie and the Pussycats song.
Oh, lovely.
As we know, Kay Hanley was the voice, the singing voice of Josie and the Pussycats in the movie. So fun set from Kay, and Juliana was up after that. Juliana with her band, and she was really concentrating on her early to mid-90s stuff, like a lot of the really popular songs from her first couple of records. And I was thinking, that's nice, because she doesn't usually dip back into too much of that stuff, I think. Songs like Everybody Loves Me and My Sister and, the, you know, those songs that people remember from the 90s. Then I suddenly remembered, oh, she's part of a 90s festival show tomorrow. So I guess it made sense that she was pulling those songs out. And then, I think we mentioned this on the show recently, she has an album coming out later this year of Electric Light Orchestra covers.
That's going to be amazing.
Yeah, whole ELO.
I'm calling it.
ELO record from Juliana is on the way. I was hoping she'd do something from ELO, and she did. She did Don't Bring Me Down.
Ooh.
From ELO. Yes, everybody freaked out. That was great. A lovely evening at an Irish pub, Cornflake. That was my latest goofy concert report with two local music heroes of ours, Kay and Juliana. So that was nice. But they're from the 90s, and we're here to talk about the 80s.
We sure are.
1981, specifically. And I've been doing most of the yammering so far, so we should toss this over to you. You're doing a commercial every week. So last week, you picked out a commercial from 1980, and this week you've picked out a commercial from 1981, which you shared with me right before we started the show.
Yeah, I am in full commercial mode. No, I'm not even watching any of the TV shows I normally like to watch. I am just spending all of my time watching commercials from the 80s.
Yeah, commercials were good back then.
Yeah, and you know, it's not so bad. I was about to make a joke about how it's having some kind of impact on me, but I think I might be better for it. So I'm glad I get a chance to share these with you. And the commercial I have picked from 1981 would have been right at home on a show that we did almost 100 flop shows ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this. Back in episode 490 of the Flopcast, we had a really stupid top 4.5 list. And I can say that because it was my idea. We did top 4.5 whistling. Do you remember that?
Vaguely. Yeah.
Well, I'll never forget.
Did I start talking about Willie Whistle, that creepy clown? I must have.
Yeah, you did. A bizarre okay. Boston clown was yes. part of the discussion. But we had to assure all of our listeners that they weren't going to have to hear whistling during the show.
Right.
So that we wouldn't scare them all away. And then we went ahead and scared them away with other things. But the commercial I picked from 1981 doesn't have a single word in it, but it does have some star power.
Yes.
We're talking the likes of Mickey Rooney, because back in 1981, although these commercials were not new, and this jingle was not new, but this take on it was, because I think from the 70s and then into the 80s and even beyond, there were these Dr. Pepper commercials.
Yeah, I think people remember the classic early 80s Dr. Pepper jingle, the I'm a Pepper, You're a Pepper song. Super catchy song. People loved it.
And these commercials featured a guy from Wales named David Naughton.
David Naughton was a pretty big star for like a week and a half yes. in the early 80s from these commercials. And he starred in a movie, a horror movie, American Werewolf in London. And he had his own sitcom as well. This was back in the disco era. There was a song called Making It, a disco song, and they made a sitcom out of it. There was a sitcom set at a disco called Making It, starring David Naughton.
Well, that had every right to succeed from the sounds of things.
yeah, get ready for a shock. I don't think it lasted long. No. The song, you can hear the song in Meatballs, the dance scene in Meatballs, like where Bill Murray comes into the room. Huh. They're playing Making It in Meatballs.
What a neat tie-in, but in this particular version, and I've seen a number of versions of the Dr. Pepper song,
yeah.
This particular one was all whistling.
This is the whistling version.
It's the whistling version.
Just a bunch of people whistling the Dr. Pepper song.
And there's a point where David Naughton offers Mickey Rooney, he's sweeping the floor.
Mickey Rooney, Hollywood legend Mickey Rooney, plays a janitor in this Dr. Pepper commercial.
He does. And he's a janitor that really doesn't want any Dr. Pepper. And he doesn't say no, he doesn't want it. He kind of whistles no.
Yeah.
And then he has a sip and he's a convert. Cue the dance number.
Yeah, I don't think I remember this commercial. I guess the whistling sounded vaguely familiar, but maybe it's just because I know the song. But I definitely don't remember that Mickey Rooney made one of these Dr. Pepper commercials. So what a nice, bizarre surprise.
Yeah, it really was bizarre. And I appreciated there aren't very many commercials you run into out there anytime that have dialogue in the form of whistling and not a single word in them. But I found one.
Mickey Rooney also had a very short-lived sitcom in this era as well. There was a show called One of the Boys. It's this guy, he's at college, and his grandfather moves into his college dorm room with him.
Oh.
Mickey Rooney's the old grandfather moving into the college. His grandson was played by Dana Carvey. This is a few years before Dana Carvey got on Saturday Night Live.
That's wacky.
It's Dana Carvey. His roommate was Nathan Lane.
That's fun.
And his girlfriend was Meg Ryan.
Wow. That's a lot of star power.
I'm not even done. Also, Scatman Crothers.
Was in this?
Was Mickey Rooney's like old buddy. Yeah, so it was just this all-star cast made this dreadful sitcom that lasted 5 minutes.
Aw.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's astonishing.
That is such a shame that it didn't last.
Yeah, he was much better off as a whistling janitor.
He was, as part of a long history of Dr. Pepper. And did you hear back in 2010 that on Dr. Pepper's 125th anniversary, David Naughton actually led a flash mob onto the floor of the New York Stock Exchange to sing the Be a Pepper Breakdown song?
So he's still at it. He never stopped singing and dancing about Dr. Pepper. And now this one is not the only Dr. Pepper ad that you shared with me today.
Yeah, because I've noticed over time with all the Dr. Pepper commercials, there's also always been a big deal about how good Diet Dr. Pepper tastes. So I thought, was there an equivalent back in 1981? And boy, did I find one. And boy, is it goofy.
You sent me a Diet Dr. Pepper commercial. I don't remember this one. And this doesn't have the song. This is a completely different song.
Yeah, it doesn't. But it, you know what it has is two people in a horse costume.
This commercial is set at a costume party. And yeah, starring the classic costume, the front and back of a horse.
And so the back of the horse is having a Diet Dr. Pepper.
grew up just every time you turn the TV on, there's two people as the front and the back of a horse. You know, as a kid, I was led to believe this was the most popular costume in America. Whereas in reality, out in the world, have you ever seen the front and the back of a horse?
No, but I've always wanted to.
Yeah, it was always, here's Fred and Barney in a horse costume. You know, every time you turn on TV, it's all horse costumes. And now it's a horse costume drinking Diet Dr. Pepper.
Which also turns into a dance number at the end.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's dancing around. There's other, like, freaky costumes all around them.
It's a delight.
I really enjoyed that. That's a good one. So another fine pair of weird, goofy, early 80s commercials. We will have links to those, of course, so that everyone can enjoy the magic of Dr. Pepper. Do you like Dr. Pepper? Do you drink it?
I seldom do, but just this week, before I was even looking into commercials, coincidentally, I thought, you know, I haven't had any Dr. Pepper in a while, so I'm drinking some during the show, actually.
You're drinking a Diet Dr. Pepper right now? Or a regular Dr. Pepper?
Yeah, I swear they're not paying me to do this.
You have regular or diet? What do you have?
Oh, regular.
Got the regular. Okay.
Although, I don't know if I'd know the difference according to their commercials.
It's according to the back of a horse, it's absolutely delicious.
Yes.
Would the back of a horse lie to you? Lie to America? I think not.
I sure hope not. Because then who can you trust?
Who can you trust if not the back half of a horse costume? Okay, outstanding. I guess as soon as we wrap up today, you're going to have to start watching a million commercials from 1982.
And no one is going to be able to stop me.
Get right back to work. Well, before we do that, I've got something from 1981 also. I wanted to really mix it up because last week I was just talking about music from 1980. For 81, I thought to be different, I wanted to find like a weird comic book from 1981, and I did.
How weird are we talking?
I texted you a photo of the comic book so you could see what I'm talking about. Out of my giant stacks of weird old comic books, I took out something called Superman in Victory by Computer.
That sounds unusual for Superman.
This is a Superman comic book from 1981, but it's not a regular Superman comic. If you look at it, you'll notice there's no price on it because it was not sold in stores. This was a promotional giveaway comic book. It says, "Compliments of Radio Shack, the biggest name in little computers." So this was a comic book that was paid for by Radio Shack to promote their computers. In fact, this was not even the only one. This was the second, I think, of three Superman comics that Radio Shack made.
That's wild.
But this is the 1981 version, and you can see it says Victory by Computer, starring the TRS-80 Computer Whiz Kids. Because that was the computer that Radio Shack sold, if you remember. It was called the TRS-80. I remember those things. Not great computers, as I recall.
Superman's endorsement was not to be believed.
Yes. Yeah, he was not being as honest as the back of the horse, who you can trust about Dr. Pepper. Yeah, Superman was pushing not the best computer on the market, I think, in my opinion. I was a Commodore 64 guy back then.
Right. Well, that was tough to top.
Yeah, but TRS-80s, they were around. I messed around with TRS-80s a bit back then. But this was a comic book just all about pushing computers on the kids. So I think these were produced and they probably gave them away at Radio Shacks. And I believe they also would just send them to schools, I think, pushing them as educational material and just shipping them out free to hopefully be distributed in classrooms and such. But it's a real Superman story, though. The writer is Cary Bates. The artist is Kurt Swan, who was the classic Superman artist from the 50s through the 80s.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is a complete Superman story, but with a pretty heavy emphasis on how wonderful Radio Shack computers are. So it's Superman and Supergirl together are visiting a classroom and talking about how great Radio Shack computers are.
I see what you're trying to do there, Radio Shack.
Yeah. Superman flies away to find Lex Luthor or something. Then Supergirl sticks around to lecture the kids some more about how great computers are. There's like these two super nerd kids, a boy and a girl. They're like the computer experts in the class, the TRS-80 computer whiz kids. Then they start talking about connecting the computer to a telephone so that they can communicate with other computers out there. Can you imagine such a thing?
Totally wild.
This was, I'll bet, for a lot of kids reading this, your introduction to, you know, the internet, to modems, yeah, and the coming world of computers communicating with each other. In 1981, most people didn't even know about this. But the best part is on the page where they're hooking up the computer to a modem, they pick up a telephone to put the telephone onto the modem, and it's a rotary phone.
Wow.
Yeah, they don't even have a push-button telephone to connect to their TRS-80. They're dialing in to the internet on a rotary phone.
Kids today will never understand.
Which is fantastic. Yeah, and there's like a whole couple of pages just kind of explaining the world of the future. Supergirl talking about, imagine having a public library right in your home or office. And stock tips, and newspaper headlines. Everything can come right into your home, Cornflake. She doesn't say anything about podcasting.
No.
Supergirl didn't know what we would be up to someday. Here we are with our rotary phones. You're using a rotary phone, right? Are you old school like me?
I hear the boot up noise in my head and everything. Yeah, of course.
So Supergirl teaches the kids about the internet, and then she goes flying away. There's a shot of Supergirl zipping around the file room at the Daily Planet to look up information about Lex Luthor. Meanwhile, the TRS-80 whiz kids pull up all that same information just as fast on the internet. Then the kids all hop on a bus to go to a computer museum to go on a tour and learn about computers even more. Meanwhile, Supergirl flies away. She gets zapped by some kind of red sun power beam or something and loses her powers, falls through a trapdoor. So Supergirl's in trouble. Meanwhile, the kids are just learning about silicon chips, microprocessors. Supergirl wakes up. She doesn't know where she is, but she finds a room with a computer in it.
Oh, does she?
With a rotary phone sitting right next to the computer.
How convenient.
So she's able to get online and contact the kids back in the classroom, and they're able to work together, figure out where she is so that Superman can go meet up with her. Supergirl escapes. She gets her powers back. Then they round up Lex Luthor's gang. Everything's great, all thanks to the TRS-80 computer.
The real hero.
Then on the last page, it's just a big glossary of computer terms to teach you the meaning of things like floppy disk and bits and bytes and RAM and ROM, you know, all that kind of stuff. Nobody knew what this was back then.
That's true.
That is the comic book Superman Victory by Computer from those weasels over at Radio Shack. Were you a fan of Radio Shack? Did you used to go there?
I think I used to buy blank tapes there to make mixtapes.
Oh, yeah. Me too. I certainly bought my fair share of blank cassette tapes at Radio Shack. Now, when you'd go in and you'd pick up a pack of blank tapes, bring it up to the cash register, would they then ask you for all your personal information?
Yes.
That was their move, remember?
Yes.
I'm trying to buy a pack of AA batteries, but now the guy wants my phone number and home address.
It was a little unnerving.
What was up at Radio Shack? They were so desperate to collect complete contact information on everybody that walked through the door.
Well, it's so they could send you more of those comics.
If you're lucky, they'll send you a Superman comic. I think you'd just end up getting Radio Shack junk mail.
Flyers.
They would take your phone number and your home address, and people would just stand there and give it to them. Not me. I would always say no.
Because I didn't like other people overhearing it.
Well, yeah, it's weird that you're also giving your information to every other creepy loser in line with you.
That's right.
As they're frantically scribbling in a notebook, standing in line right behind you. But then I looked up Radio Shack this afternoon. I started wondering, what's the deal with Radio Shack? Because they've just been, they kind of went out of business some years back. And
yeah, faded out.
Yeah, but then they'd announce, we're coming back. And then they file for bankruptcy like every 6 months, I think. Yeah.
It's the go-to move.
Yeah. But there's a website, though, because when I Googled Radio Shack, it took me to RadioShack.com, which still exists as some kind of a website, like selling computer junk online, I guess. But what I loved, you go to RadioShack.com, as soon as I went there, this little pop-up thing came up, uh-huh, and it said, RadioShack.com wants to know your location.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, look at that. Look at that. They're still at it.
Stop.
That's adorable. For 50 years, they've been asking me for my location.
I make like in Vogue. They're never going to get it.
I like that they're still trying. But then I was reading about Radio Shack, and this was interesting. Radio Shack started in 1921 as a store to sell radio equipment, amateur radio equipment. But their first store, the first Radio Shack, was in Boston. I did not know they started locally, so that's cool.
Who knew?
And I like this as well, because remember Tandy? Like, some of their stuff would be branded as Tandy.
I do.
Yeah, that's because Radio Shack was bought by Tandy in the 1960s, but the Tandy Corporation was a leather goods company.
I remember that about them as well.
That's weird. So a leather goods company looking to expand into other hobby-related businesses, it says on Wikipedia. So then they got into electronics. But I thought that was funny because, you know, Coleco, who did all kinds of video games and ColecoVision and all sorts of toys and stuff, they started as a leather company also.
That I did not know.
Yeah, Coleco, and they were also local, New England. Coleco stands for Connecticut Leather Company.
What?
But as they started expanding their product line and got into plastics, and that's what led them into electronics and toys. All these leather companies got into video games and computers.
Interesting path of evolution. That's so weird.
That's what I learned today, thanks to Superman and Victory by Computer, the free promotional Radio Shack comic book from 1981.
What a twist this odyssey back into 1981 has taken.
That's where we ended up. Who knows what's going to happen next week? But before we wrap up this week, I had one last quick plug for you. And that's also on a DC Comics theme. Coincidentally, we want to point people towards another fine podcast here on the ESO Network. And that's Earth Station DCU. Because our friends Drew and Cletus were kind enough to have me on as a guest recently on their show, all about DC stuff. Earth Station DCU episode 336, they had me on to talk about Shazam number one, the new Shazam comic book, which we were chatting about here on the Flopcast a few weeks ago.
Oh, neat.
I can't stop talking about Shazam for some reason. So we'll have a link to their show as well. Everybody go check out Earth Station DCU, your source for all things DC. Check that out. And I think that'll do it for today, Cornflake. Please get us out of here.
Before we go, of course, we want all of our listeners to know where you find us on the internet between shows. We're at flopcast.net, facebook.com/flopcast, on Mastodon, specifically at universodon.com/@flopcast, and on Instagram, the_flopcast. What we like to do is recommend that you go over to Apple Podcasts. It's a great place to leave a rating and or a review for the show. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Next time Sponge Awareness performs, I assure you we will be dressed as the front and the back of a horse. Everybody can look forward to that.
Yes, please.
Cornflake, thanks for chatting about 1981 with me. Everybody, thanks for hanging out with us. Please be safe, be kind, be silly. And for some 1982 talk, we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And we host the Watchathon or Rassilon,
a podcast where we're watching through all of classic Doctor Who.
Nope, we've already done that.
We did? Well, then now what do we do?
What do we two do? We review New Who.
Ooh, we two review New Who?
We do, just for you.
Who?
Not you, them, the listeners of the podcast.
Ah.
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
Now we review New Who, too.
Woohoo!
Cornflake, it's the secret after show, and you just sent me another 1981 soda commercial.
I did. I'm not done talking about soft drinks yet. At least as long as anybody's left to listen, I will continue to talk about soft drink commercials from 1981.
All right, so we got one more. This one's just for the secret people.
And it is something that you'd have to look close or you'll miss it for a 1981 A&W root beer commercial. That includes a very young Patrick Swayze in it.
Yeah, so it looks a lot like the David Naughton Dr. Pepper commercials. it's a bunch of people singing and dancing, and there's a dude up front singing. But yeah, there's Swayze in the background on roller skates.
It's like going bananas in the background.
He was really doing like some disco roller skating back there.
Yeah, he had the moves.
I mean, I guess we knew that he could dance. He can dirty dance.
That's true. He can dirty dance on wheels.
Disco roller skate. Yeah, this is a couple of years before The Outsiders.
It's true. So I guess he's an unknown at this point.
And absolutely.
While nobody puts Baby in the corner, somebody put Patrick Swayze in the background of this commercial.
That's fantastic. I don't remember this commercial at all. But yeah, so we're not going to post a link to this because this is the secret after show. But everybody, if you pop on YouTube and just search for 1981 A&W root beer Patrick Swayze, I'm quite sure you'll find it. And you should. You'll love it.
Yeah, it's just a 30-second commercial. But you may have to watch it twice to catch him. Look on the left because he's in the back.
You'll find him. You'll find Swayze. I know you people.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.